until you step into that holy and you can really just be open about your shit, then I don't even think you've really grasped the nature of how deep this shadow work really goes. But I would say that's kind of the tip of the iceberg for most people, is knowing that there's something that you're unhappy with about your family and the traits that you carry with, realizing that those aren't, they are your burden, but they're not your karma in the meaning that you didn't earn them. They were given to you. And now it's your responsibility for the generations that will come after you to do what you can to heal that in ways that the generation before you didn't know how to, didn't have the tools or the education. You know, with all the connectivity and the free information that's going around now, there are no excuses not to take your health, your happiness, your mental health, all of that as seriously as you can, because the information's all there.
Welcome back to another episode of Cultivating Change, everyone. I'm your host, Alex Corey. Today's guest is a new friend and an extremely rich, articulated individual who's had a number of just a roller coaster of a life. I've met Noah Wells through a number of just super vulnerable phone conversations. I've been following his story on social media and just in such powerful industries and playing with such darkness. He's done a ton of shadow work, and we'll explain what that means in the video. But his story hopefully will impact you if you've had a lot of neurodivergence, a lot of pain, been trying to numb through a lot of altered states, a lot of substances, just figure out who you are and get through life and manage relationships and business. All of that's happened to Noah, and his story is quite impactful. I'm sure he'll get something out of his trips through yoga to be more in his body, through his healing process, and just his experience in trying to get out of pain. This is a great conversation with Noah Wells. Just for a disclaimer, obviously, if you're going to do any sort of practice with altered states or any substance, seek out licensed professionals and just have all the support that you need and never try anything by yourself. And I started following your story, and I was like, what are you going through? And then there was just so much richness of your what the things you're involved in. Like, I've been following the cannabis and CBD industry for a while because my farming partner used to be in it as well. So you had your hands in the same things that I've been paying attention to. And then we spoke on the phone. If you want to just give a little overview of how you got into the industries, how you got into your self-discovery journey, Sundance. So I think I remember you having some experience with pharmaceuticals in your past. Is that accurate?
So oddly enough, it's really been this full circle process of discovering my pain, trying to process it as a child back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Therapy wasn't really so socially accepted back then. I think it was still one of those things, and especially as a male, that you just didn't want to talk to somebody about that stuff. And I went through a really dark time when I was in about seventh grade, probably about 14, puberty onset. Had a lot of trouble with my friendships and my peer groups. Always been kind of a different thinker, on the spectrum, some might say, but just far enough on the outside that I never really fit well with social conversation and things like that. So I think I saw a movie called Around the Fire when probably about 14 or 15, and the premise was this prep school kid got sent away to boarding school or something, probably was in trouble, and ends up going to a concert, and somebody gives him some LSD, and he ends up taking the acid, and he just kind of goes through this wild experience of visuals and the experience that you got making it to a Grateful Dead concert and just completely getting owned as a first timer. And it was just so cool. the experience he had. He ended up going back to prep school and started selling weed, and then got into selling acid on tour. And something about that lifestyle just really spoke to me. And about that same time, I think I started seeing some older friends that just looked different than everybody else. They were climbers and listened to jam bands, but I didn't really know what that meant back then. And I kind of figured out that they were all smoking weed. And I think at that point, before I even really made the weed connection, I started listening to the Grateful Dead and Phish, and I genuinely didn't like the music. I was like 14. I was listening to Garth Brooks and the Beatles. And now I've got this Phish Rift album about some dude sleeping sideways in his bed, and it was torture. But after a year or two, I really fell in love with the stuff, and it started to make sense to me. And through those same channels, I started getting closer and closer to the pot, and finally got my hands on some cannabis. And things really changed for me. Like, I really found this place that I could be myself, even inside my body for a short time, and knew that it couldn't be wrong. All I was grew up in the Christian church, went to Christian school. It was not acceptable at all in any conversation in the South around year 2000. And so it was really an extreme move as a child from a well-to-do family to go out looking for this drug. And I started using my weekend money working for my dad, because I knew I could buy an eighth of weed every week, and that just kind of became my medicine. And from 15, until present day, really, but those high school years, that was just kind of my routine. And buying my bag for the week, ended up wanting to smoke a little more, so I started selling a little, and then really started enjoying the money and the lifestyle that came with that. So by the time I got to college, I just didn't really have an interest in conventional learning or a job or anything like that. I think California had just legalized their first program in 2004 when I went to school, and I went to App State, which was a cannabis-friendly institution as is. So yeah, I was just able to kind of have a different classroom, if you will, through those college years, when I started learning more about the music scene, the social economics that went around these parties, and how you could create a lifestyle from, for me, it ended up being making jewelry and selling gemstones, which I did professionally. I had eBay stores, websites, I've vended at festivals, I mean, did the whole nine. But it was always to keep me closer to the psychedelic world and the cannabis world. I also got into mushrooms pretty early, about 16. I think I had my first 7 gram experience, which most people don't do intentionally, and neither did I. But
Yeah, hero's dose is 5, so that's plenty.
the mushrooms were about the color of your glasses, and I don't think I've ever seen any as intimidating since. And I ate the whole bag. It was completely full-on died out of body experience. My parents weren't, they were out of town. Like, none of my friends could comprehend what I was going through. So it was just me and this ride. And I feel like that was kind of my early introduction into the shadow work and, what would pretty much consume my life. As you mentioned, the pharmaceuticals, throughout the years, I've skateboarded, making jewelry was really hard on my hands. And I had a couple episodes just where the drug culture kind of overlapped the pharmaceutical culture. And in my earlier years, I didn't understand what those meant to people's lives and how dangerous they were. And I ignorantly had access to them and helped others get them and have a history that I know has also been part of my journey. And later in my life, it switched from kind of a means to an end with the selling and the recreational. I had put them down because I knew, I found out the dangers they were causing and separated myself from that. I only wanted to be around cannabis, grew dreadlocks down to my waist, wouldn't eat aspirin, and really just went that IRE lifestyle for 4 or 5 years through my 20s. And at some point, the way to life just came back. I had crippled my hands making jewelry. I couldn't even open Coke cans because my hands would just be so locked up. And had a good friend also, and or I think it was my weed dealer, and he ended up, just saying, "How about an oatmeal cookie?" which is what he called OxyContin back then. And That's all it took was just right place. It was there. I was in pain. And then the real ride started. I had lived some dysfunction from alcohol and drugs before that, but this is when heroin hit the scene. And at the peak, I think I was on about 6 milligrams of Xanax just to curb the anxiety that I had created from all the poor life choices that I had made up until that point. And it's too much. Tried to escape into a lot of relationships that failed. I poured myself into my gym and jewelry business, and I couldn't do it professionally because of the hand pain and the difficulty to make it as an artist, and the lifestyle I was accustomed to growing up just couldn't be sustained from a startup business. And I was just constantly reaching and living outside of my means, and the constant cocktail of pharmaceuticals, cannabis, beer, whatever, it was only making that situation much, much worse. So about 2013 is when I made it to the end of my road and finally found the will and the strength through another failed relationship and just the circumstances I was under, and decided to make a change. Hit the yoga mat, did 55 days of straight yoga. Let my teacher know exactly what was going on. If I'm not on the mat, I'm using drugs. You call me out and make sure I'm here every single day. And I did it. And I was able to prop myself up enough to convince a woman that I was worth being with. We ended up being together for 8 years, 7 years, eight with kind of the breakup, and almost got married. We were engaged. And what I hadn't figured out is, although I was off drugs for about 10 years, I hadn't actually done any of the hard work to recover. I hadn't done any of the shadow work. I hadn't been going to therapy. I stopped practicing yoga as soon as I fell into this new relationship, even though the nature of our relationship was to become yoga instructors together. And I just learned the hard way that this stuff doesn't go away, and you can't just shove it under the rug or push it down until it doesn't pop up anymore. And you can use crutch after crutch to try to escape it, but at the end of the day, the bad crutches will come back if you don't start really addressing some of these issues. So about 2013 is when Colorado legalized recreational cannabis, and I had made my way out there from North Carolina and was getting into that scene. And kind of shifted back to that mindset I was in with my dreadlocks in my 20s. I'm back. I'm able to work with cannabis semi-legally. It seems like we've got a new frontier now, and I can start to really address some of this trauma. But again, I didn't do it from a proper modality or container of healing. I did it through being a workaholic and thinking that I was God's gift to the cannabis plant. So few years of really, really difficult relationships, partners taking advantage of me, corporate interests coming in. At one time, this group told us that they were working with a Rothschild fund of $180 million, and they wanted me and a couple players to start developing the infrastructure for interstate commerce when it was to come online. And I don't think they were completely lying, but I also don't think they quite had access to the budget they had claimed they did, or at least not firsthand. And a few years of tall tales, lies, and literally everyone telling us that we were, untouchable in the space, essentially. And then the hemp thing kind of happened around 2015, 2016, and I saw a way out in a way that I could kind of take that power into my hands. And because of the experience that I had, we could do some genetic work, genetic modification, if you will, by making feminized seed and really start developing these businesses and establishing real war chests so we could start opening our own dispensaries or starting CBD companies or wherever the work kind of took us. It was a really crazy experience because I was selling some CBD products, but only to be advantageous for the new ability to sell on a website, but I still didn't really know other than taking the capsules myself. And I remember one funny instance, PayPal used to, they would flag your account and then ban it and hold your money for 180 days. So as a startup company, you can't live without, you have 10 grand in your PayPal account and that goes away and now you've got nothing. So this probably happened to me six times over the course of this experience. And I remember one of the first times I tried those CBD capsules, I looked at my partner, I went, PayPal just closed another one of our accounts. I can't stop smiling. And I didn't know why, but it was just something triggered in me. And I could tell that there was some real medicine here that I wasn't getting from smoking cannabis per se. And then we had a friend that was in Tennessee, no access, and their child was having seizures so much so that they couldn't get through a court custody battle to resolve issues between the parents without the kid having an episode. So we got them some tincture. They made it through the battle just fine. And then the next week, the mom calls us and said, "What is it that you gave my child? She is now dancing, singing, coloring, and speaking for the first time at 8 years old. We didn't know that this child was autistic and inaudible on top of epileptic."
Wow.
So every time I tell this story, I get chills because it was just such a powerful experience to see that we not only solved a problem, but then we actually gave a child a quality of life that they never imagined possible, and basically on accident, because all we were thinking is, oh, we know this works for seizures. So that really opened my eyes to just how much truth there was left to uncover about this plant and what we were doing. As we spoke a little in the past, from my research, this goes all the way back to the Second World War. Israel knew about CBD, cannabinoids, and their cancer-fighting properties. They knew about the seizures. They knew about so many molecules that we're now even just rediscovering today in the 2020s. And that got me thinking about why something so horrible could happen, like the Holocaust and what was going on in Germany. And as soon as the war ended, all of those scientists ended up in the United States working for our pharmaceutical industries and also big ag. They started using Agent Orange and napalm as our pesticides and our nutrients. So they were attacking us on a biological level by changing the DNA of the plants that we were feeding our bodies with. And then they started the pharmaceutical industries, which has been a 50-year, if not longer, war on the human nervous system and immune system. And 50 plus years, they've still not created a solution for anything. All they have are these band-aids that keep people, keep them a customer for life, essentially. And now documentaries, multiple, I mean, Hollywood movies are coming out and showing that not only was this known, but it was more likely than not in the master plan of marketing all of these new drugs. And the distance from the doctors to the companies that owned them and sold them was just so great that even the doctors didn't know they were misprescribing because they were reading textbooks that were printed by the same companies that own the pharmaceutical companies. And as we all know, we've gotten so far away from a natural, sustainable, whole food source and the chemicals, fake foods, and the things that we fill our bodies with have just gotten so far away from what the body actually needs to survive. Like your work with the water. It's the simplest solution that no one cares anyone about. And it's heartbreaking. I tried many years, about 10 actually, to push that water technology through the commercial cannabis cultivation and just to sell it to all of my friends. And it was so difficult. So my heart goes out to you for doing the good
It's
work.
coming back
And
though. Water is now just because there's so many industrial accidents and people are just for at least a period of time, 2 weeks, whatever, as long as it's in the news and it's got the collective attention, people then think about water and then it catches a certain percentage and they run with it, much like, glyphosate or some random endocrine disruptor will make story, Monsanto or someone, Bayer will get sued for $100 million, catch a certain percentage of the population's attention. And then they're aware. But yeah, it takes, unfortunately, so many of those for a large amount of people for it to come into their consciousness. Yeah, it's definitely an
Yeah,
uphill
and that
battle.
big number that everyone gets enamored by is like 0.1% of what the company has when they made like 80% on the backs of the people. You know, it's just it could never balance the scales.
They build it into the
So
price point. Like they know. They build their lawsuit costs in. I mean, they're not dumb.
So that really just got me fired up about the industry. You know, I had some experience growing up in the South, having my own medicinal needs for cannabis and finding that medicine and never going on pharmaceuticals as a child. I didn't do the Adderall or any antidepressants or anything like that. I felt that the cannabis was helping me enough. And I still think that that was a pretty strong strategy, although now I would highly recommend the hemp and the CBD route versus a teenager smoking weed.
Yeah. What did it specifically do? Like, what did you notice change in your body whenever you were under THC or CBD or whatever cannabinoids?
Just slowed my thoughts down and gave me some peace. I was told when I was growing up that I tested very highly on some of the preliminary achievement tests and things like that. And so much so that they were actually concerned and told my parents that it was probably going to be a very difficult childhood for me because I just thought so much differently than everyone else around me. And that hyperactivity in the brain, kind of an OCD neurotic approach to looking at details, it just really made it hard. You know, I started noticing, you know, 14, 15, mom still dropping us off the parties age, that I would just sit on the stairs in the corner and everyone would be socializing and it would seem so natural to them. And I was just over, you know, hunched over and couldn't really. If I had a girlfriend or some type of relationship or something that I could like work or do something on, that made sense to me. But the idea of just like speaking to speak, never, I could never get it. And so that really just got me out of that mindset and made me comfortable being alone, quite honestly. Like I like to smoke and listen to my music. I usually had a serious long-term romantic interest and we would just kind of drift away into our own little escape. And that's why I'm saying, you know, I don't know that the cannabis or the smoking cannabis is the way to go at that age. But I don't think I was wrong in the way I was working to balance some chemistry in my body that a doctor would have otherwise tried to do differently. And over the years, I definitely think it's been a double-edged sword. You know, I know that it served me at a time and it helped me get to this point and is a part of my story. But now I'm seeing how much it's bringing me down and how at 38 years old, I'm still struggling with smoking addictions, you know, and that inability to sit with myself without having that dopamine fix and that, you know, like if I tried to get on Facebook or Instagram without smoking weed, my brain would just explode, you know? And now,
You and everyone else, but you might notice it more.
You know what I'm saying? It's
Oh,
just
yeah.
that type of engagement, like I couldn't even step into because my brain just couldn't handle it. And now I'm seeing what a crutch that's become because I never learned how to handle it. And there are ways of healthy coping and breathing and working through this stuff. So the CBD industry was not any more forgiving than the cannabis industry. Even worse so because it allowed all the money to come in, not just the money that was risk inclined and would get into cannabis, but anybody that had money to invest, it didn't matter. I saw tech guys that sold their companies in Silicon Valley and sat on the edge of a farm in their Audi and pointed and told the farmers what to do while they literally farmed out of a new Audi on the side of the dirt road. Like it was the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. And people throwing hundreds of thousands of dollars at this, life savings. I worked with over 50 farmers or farms in my experience. I honestly can't say that one succeeded. I hope that that was no fault of mine. And I know that we had about a 1% success rate as an industry. So the math doesn't lie either. Yeah, I think in West Virginia, I read the other day, 11 acres were planted last year. 11. We're going for thousands. I think there was 50,000 acres planted in a couple years past for a single state to only be pushing 11 after 7 years of legitimacy, banks opening up, legal avenues, all of that is just it just shows how much dysfunction is in the industry. Is that being the new ag crop that's gonna,
Cash crop,
turn
yeah.
all the farms around? Yeah. All of these farmers just thought that it was going to save the day. And we didn't know any differently because we weren't farmers. We were just cannabis guys and we needed more land and they needed our experience. So we jumped in the trenches together. And man, it's just been so hard because there's been so much trauma and relationships and business is never easy. Like they
Yeah.
say, never do business with friends. And it's kind of that idea, because all these people became my friends and my family. I lived
Yep.
in some of their houses for periods of time. And I made a joke that, at Thanksgiving dinner, no one's going to be talking about the turkey. Everyone's going to be talking about me and whether we succeeded or we failed that year at that crop. And that was a lot of pressure on me. I had about 1,000 acres under my control in 2020 or 2019. Before the pandemic came in, and I had gone through a hostile takeover in Colorado. Best friend turned his back on me. Farm partner colluded with him, and they locked me out and stole all of my work, the employees I had trained. I had my whole crew living in my house, and they jumped ship. I mean, literally eating off my dinner table every single night. And it was hard. I moved east and rebuilt and started working in about three states with some very, very high level companies. One even held a patent to a nursery liner that almost every farm in the country uses. I mean, if you've been in ag, you've used an Ellipod at some point,
Yep.
given you're farming these particular crops. But you get what I'm saying. It was not a small feat for me to strike up an exclusive partnership and then get them to fund our research. And we created millions, if not tens of millions of dollars worth of seed from nothing for the second time at that. And the pandemic came in. We had a pretty big market correction before the pandemic,
Yeah.
but then the pandemic just really, really wiped all the rest of the pieces off the table. And for me personally, it stole all my hope. I'd been hanging on to my relationship that was struggling at the wayside of my professional career. I'd been off alcohol for a bit, but had gotten back into it in 19, after the hostile takeover. I kind of, I didn't go back on the drugs, but I definitely slipped back into drinking pretty regularly. And the cigarettes, which you saw me smoking a cigarette today, I'm still fighting that battle. It's been 20 years. And the weight of just, it wasn't just my businesses, it wasn't just my relationships. It was the Epstein stuff. It was the child trafficking. It was the pharmaceutical lies. It was the idea that now we've got this vaccine rushing in that is literally ripping families apart. And I would have never gotten a vaccine in my entire life. Up until that point, you would have never been able to convince me to even take a flu shot. I was so emotionally broken from the industry, my relationship, and issues I was having with my family that my parents are older, and my dad has had 40 major surgeries and was going through cancer treatment, and they didn't want me to come visit them until I got vaccinated. They didn't say it in so many words, but my brother actually did. I had been estranged from him for years, and he said that, when you get vaccinated, you can come meet your niece, basically. And that was the position that I got put in. And even then, I wouldn't have given in. I would have waited it out, but I was just tired of being wrong. And I was tired of being selfish and felt like my behavior up until then was not in the best interest of the majority. And I got the first round of the shot. And to this day, I'm still disgusted by it. And it makes me so sad to know that my story is heavy and I went through a lot, but I'm not alone.
Yeah.
And I knew how to handle it and had the means to go do the shadow work to get through it. And I knew going in that I believe my body is a stronger purifier than any vaccine they can put in me, and that I can clean that stuff right out of my body if I need to. But other people don't know that. and other people are feeling like they failed or made a bad decision or didn't make the right decision. And all that just became too much. This wasn't really the world I wanted to live in. And I didn't have my professional hopes. My relationship was crumbling, as I said. And by the end of 2020, I just lost it. On my birthday, I blew up my entire life and moved out of the house I was living in with my partner, started facing some hard truths with the hemp industry and my ability to move forward, although I still did try to fight for my farmers and the partners for another year. It was an uphill battle, and people weren't buying seed and they weren't planting, and there just wasn't a lot we could do. So by April of 2020, 2021, oh, I'm sorry, April of 2022, end of 2020, I fell apart. 21, I fought as hard as I could, maintained my sobriety, no alcohol, no pills, even stopped smoking cannabis for the first time in my life. I had five therapists,
Wow.
not in the year, I had five weekly that I would go see. I was doing anything I could possibly do to try to save my life. I listened to 10 years of my brother's sermons in like 3 months, like his entire career. I said, there's some truth in here. I respect how much work you put into your education. Like, let's hear it. I was looking everywhere for these answers. And I had a long run with pharmaceuticals. I used to make DMT back in the day. I've smoked hundreds of times. I've eaten lots of LSD, mushrooms, synthetic mescaline, all that kind of stuff. And really felt there was something more there. And it heard about ayahuasca, and we've kind of seen in the news the celebrities and stuff giving it a little hype. But I knew of ayahuasca from my deeper healing circles. And had a really good friend that went and lived with the Shipibo in Peru for about 10 years. He actually did all of my ayahuasca
Yeah, I've been
tattoos.
looking
And
at that.
before,
It's glorious.
yeah, I'm completely covered, even wearing the shirt, but it can't quite make it out. But yeah, before I even knew ayahuasca was my road, I spent 60 hours getting my entire body tattooed in an art form that was paying homage to this process and this ceremony. And that was my first offering to this shadow work. And, throughout the process, like I said, I tried the different modalities. And this was into 2020, early 21 when I did all the tattoo work. So I hadn't quite been thinking about going to do ayahuasca. And even then, me and my friends were laughing because he was like, you're emotionless. You're getting your body ripped apart. Like, you might not even need
Yeah,
ayahuasca.
right.
But just a joke. Everyone needs ayahuasca. So yeah, by the end of 2021, I went on a yoga retreat. That was kind of a Hail Mary. I'd gotten into Bikram practice and was really enjoying the crew I was training with near my home in West Virginia. And he had a retreat down here in Mexico. So, I hopped on a plane. No, hopped on a plane to Denver to expedite a passport so I could fly back to DC and then fly to Mexico. Because I want to, it's all in a week. I thought we could just do the overnight thing. So I booked my ticket, paid for the retreat. And then I was like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
Nope.
So went on a pretty serious mission to go make it to this retreat. And while I was there, there was a therapist that did some shadow work. And, with my five therapists, what's taking on a few more? So I signed up for every massage clinic, sound healing, cacao ceremony that they had and met this woman named Nina along the way. Well, the retreat isn't really, it's more of the Kundalini vibe,
Yeah.
really no drugs at all or even plant medicine. So she wasn't even really supposed to be talking about the work that she did. But I think we started talking about my tattoos, my journey, something. And it kind of overlapped. And then she showed me a book that she had written on working with ayahuasca and told me that she was actually a coach or a therapist that worked with an integration process that involved a year of therapy with weekly sessions around this one ayahuasca ceremony, and that this one ayahuasca ceremony would basically carry the content for your therapy for an entire year, as long as you didn't start mixing in a lot of other plant medicines, get back on the alcohol, stuff like that. If you stick with the ayahuasca, then she'll continue to teach you. So I ended up living in Mexico. I left the retreat. We did, so I skipped forward a little bit there, but I left the retreat and I went back to the States. Knew her in process involved coming and staying alone for about a month in an Airbnb, and I had a thriving website and manufacturing all these CBD products. So leaving just didn't seem like it was possible. Like, I just couldn't imagine how that would work. So things got darker, so dark, in fact, that she decided she couldn't help me anymore and that I just wasn't ready for this process. And it wasn't because she couldn't do anything, but it's because I wasn't ready to help myself. So we took a break and I continued with the other therapy. Things didn't get better. I found myself on Klonopin and Wellbutrin to try to manage the anxiety and the depression, and was able to get off that. But by about April of last year, 2022, I really just had enough. I had moved back in with my parents in Tennessee. I was operating out of their house with my website, and I was just hanging on to whatever business was still trickling in. But that was kind of another bubble that I had gotten involved in after the hemp seed that was the Delta 8 and kind of this new hemp derivative market. And I knew that that was not going to last either. So I had no hope. I carried on as far as I could wake up and just do the work. But once I really had to sit with myself, I couldn't do it. I left the country in April to go to Thailand on a yoga mission trip, and then back to Mexico to that same retreat center to do a month-long Bikram training, hoping, praying that I would find something to hold on to in that time. But ultimately, I was prepared just to spend my money and kill myself when I ran out. Like, I didn't really have a plan. I didn't really think I was going to make it. I fantastically thought that I could get through this Bikram training and that might show me that I was strong enough to make it, but I failed out of that thing within the first week. Came over with jet lag from Thailand. My world was upside down. I was 3 days late and literally a dollar short, and they wanted me to memorize multiple cues, be able to deliver them eloquently the next day, and then at the end of this 30-day period, be able to deliver a 90-minute class word for word. And I believe I'm dyslexic anyways. Learning has never been my strong suit, and this process just spit me up and threw me out. Fortunately, I found myself right across the street from my ayahuasca coach, and I knew that she had experience with my past. And I said, okay, well, let's go talk to Nina because she can at least give me a point of reference and let me know if I'm copping out and giving up, or if I'm honoring my body in this path right now and saying that, this is just too much. She kept telling me, I've only got so much energy and I can either fight for my life or I can fight for my businesses. And what ended up happening is I realized that that was true and I let go. And I got back into the program with her. I started working with Cambo, a medicine that comes from a tree frog, and really, really enjoyed the process there and started training and kind of using that with my free time. But I also went and did that ayahuasca ceremony that we had been planning. And I did that around May of last year. I actually had my second ceremony this year. And it's been a really powerful experience. I'd love to say that it's been easier, but it is not. It's really profound the layers of work that we need to do. I remember when I was going down this road, I remember when I just thought 30 days of rehab would solve all my problems. And I can go in 30 days, I'm gonna be in, out, I'm gonna be at, back out there and crushing life. I'm basically looking at year three of that 30-day process, and I can honestly say that I don't see an end in sight. My death date of when I had planned to kill myself is actually coming up in about 3 weeks. And I feel stronger and I don't feel like killing myself, but there's just so much work, more work that needs to be done. And that's kind of the nature of healing in general, and this shadow work and this process. Post Malone just made a really funny statement that he quit drinking sodas, and I saw someone post, well, maybe you should think about the 50 cigarettes you say you smoke a day opposed to the soda that you think is killing you. And that's kind of the American way. It's like we take this baby step into healing, but then we don't look at any of the real problems or any of the real work that needs to be done. And we carry that along and we pat ourselves on the back and we think we're doing so good. And then we get faced with something, someone, some experience that makes us want a little more. And so we dive in a little deeper. And that's how people such as yourself and myself end up with these fancy water machines and literally driving with 5 gallon jugs of water with the seat belt on them in the passenger seat. And it just becomes so much more than we ever expected. But the process also gets really beautiful and fulfilling along the way, you know? And I think that's the biggest message that I could give the people and kind of working through your story, because yeah, mine's crazy and not everyone is going to have been a cannabis crusader
No,
for
but a
20
bunch of people
years.
are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I guess, you should never minimize somebody's experience or the effort or the beliefs that they have, you know? So we're all fighting, we're all on these crusades in different ways, I guess is what I'm saying. So I guess the shadow work.
Yeah, can you define, because we've said about four times, what does shadow work mean to you?
Shadow work to me has become digging up the family trauma lines. The, oh, you're just like your dad, or you're just like your mom, or my mom was this way, so I'm destined to be this way. It goes into the Christian theology of carrying the sins of your father for three generations. It goes into DNA and scientists proving that we actually pass trauma through our DNA onto our children. I just danced with the Lakota that you said you wanted to touch on, and they say that every year that you dance heals 100 years of these family lines and affects 1,000 people, because that's how many people I guess can go through the generations. Or I'm getting a little fuzzy on that, but I think you understand where I'm coming from. So the shadow work to me is saying no more bullshit. It's saying I'm not going to put profits before my health, and I'm going to take the crazy leap of faith of letting a successful business go to focus on my healing and my happiness and finding out why I am on this planet in this body. You know, I just don't feel like most people are living life the way it's meant to be lived. And that, I think, is what I discovered through the ayahuasca experience and this year container, and then seeing what the next year looks like, and then incorporating the Sundance with it this year and understanding what a 4-year devotion to this work looks like, and the intention that goes into it. I just had a really, really good talk with a friend of mine, a sister that's only a year ahead of me, but light years as far as maturity and experience in this plant medicine. She's native Mexican and grew up with more of this culture, so she's been living it for much longer. And we were just kind of defining what it means to be a warrior and what it means to own your truth. And there was a really beautiful example of just a romantic situation where she was with somebody that could be authentic. They could ask real questions and get real answers. And at the end of these real questions, they decided that that wasn't the best fit, and they were able to both express love and feel rejection at the same time. And I feel like that's something that we're just unable to comprehend. Again, I keep going back to America just because that's what I know.
Yeah.
But I do think we're further away from the truth than many other cultures are, from what I've experienced and how they live their lives. And we get roped into these pharmaceuticals as a child, or these grades that we need to make for our parents or college, and then these college loans that roll into the necessity for a job, and then a mortgage that then ties you to a place that you may never leave. People get anchored to these mortgages, and then that's their entire life, and they're now a slave to this little wall. I'm living in basically the size of my bedroom in my former houses, and I couldn't be more content.
Yeah.
I get no Amazon packages. I have less things. I don't buy stuff anymore other than fruit and juice.
Yep.
And like, I love it. It's just amazing how few of those distractions we really need. So in my mind, shadow work is whatever that is to you. Like I said, not everyone grew up and had my exact circumstances, so my path is not going to be the same for everyone, but we all know that bigger step that we could be taking, that way that we can show up authentically, that conversation that we can have, or that truth that we know that we need to be speaking. And until you step into that wholly, and you can really just be open about your shit, then I don't even think you've really grasped the nature of how deep this shadow work really goes. But I would say that's kind of the tip of the iceberg for most people, is knowing that there's something that you're unhappy with about your family and the traits that you carry with, realizing that those aren't, they are your burden, but they're not your karma in the meaning that you didn't earn them. They were given to you. And now it's your responsibility for the generations that will come after you to do what you can to heal that in ways that the generation before you didn't know how to, didn't have the tools or the education. You know, with all the connectivity and the free information that's going around now, there are no excuses not to take your health, your happiness, your mental health, all of that as seriously as you can, because the information's all there. I remember vaguely when the avocado war started, and avocados were considered bad for you and now good for you. You know what I'm saying? But there was just a time when you couldn't get good supplements and clear information on a healthy, balanced diet. And we have that now. And now with therapy and all of these other healing modalities that are surfacing, yoga being so widely accepted in the States. When we were growing up, it's hard to get in a yoga class, you know, and a little weird at that. Even for me, being a drug dealing, dreadlock wearing hippie, going to yoga is still kind of weird for me. You know, I'd rather go skateboard and beat myself up. So yeah, I think it's very similar to the Christian idea that we're fallen, we're broken people, and that we will spend this entire life trying to learn what it means to just be a good, decent person. And you take that same idea into the secular world with the shadow work, and you say, this is my way of honoring the divinity that's within myself. This is a way for me to have that respect, to create those boundaries, and become a person of respect who even the most despicable people out there know they're despicable. I don't care how lost they are. When they're alone with themselves at night, they know that they've done something that wasn't to the best of their abilities. And so for me, that's really what it is trying to unlearn all of those things, both religious and worldly, that had gotten me to the point of thinking that I'm not enough, that if I don't have, you know, six figures plus coming in every year, then I'm not successful, that my looks or appearance are really going to affect my ability to find a partner that can show me genuine love and feel loved. And just to really find a way to make a home inside my body, because I've never had one. And I want it so badly. You know, we all do. When the CBD thing really got going, I described to everyone that CBD is like that warm blanket you put on when you were a kid, when you were sick from school and mom brought you some soup. Maybe it was a snow day and you were by the fire and you just passed out and you took that long, deep nap because you just didn't have any problems. There wasn't really anything for you to worry about. And I think we all know that feeling. We all remember it and we all lose it somewhere along the way. And what I think is becoming my life's pursuit is not only to figure out how to cultivate that within myself, and I'm still working on it. I won't try to fool anyone and say that it comes quickly or easily. And I know it'll take many more years to even get to the baseline I want to be at, but I see how it could happen. And I feel it coming along, and I feel driven and motivated to help other people make it to that point as well. Because, like they say, those that can't do teach. And I know I'm doing as much as I can, and I'm going to keep trying and working, but I've got yoga certifications. I can administer Cambo. I know a lot about cannabis and consult with CBD, but that's not what I feel called to to just instruct or show people the motions. I want to step into it with them. I want to sit in that dark, scary space that you don't want to be in by yourself. And I want to have the strength to be able to do that and still walk away with my balance. So yeah, I guess that's the kind of long-winded on what my shadow work process means,
That's
and where I
perfect.
think others, could kind of start in the process.
So you sprinkled, through that entire journey, there was yoga sprinkled in there. Did you get any, do you think that helped keep you semi-stable amidst the chaos? Do you, were there any revelations? What did it help keep you embodied? What did you get from having that consistent, a consistent practice through all of that?
When I was really suffering, the biggest thing I got from it was community. Again, just like the Christian faith, the church community, there is a need to be connected. And we get so disconnected in our daily life, running to work, little time with our partners, things like that, that we really lose touch with community. So that's one of the biggest things that I've found in yoga, is that there is a community of people there that are willing to be there for other people and are all going through it. As far as a discipline, for me personally, an hour practice a day, especially a group practice where somebody else is pushing me, the feeling that I get when I leave that class is definitively different than the feeling that I had walking in, and one that I could never say I couldn't use. Even on my best days, I still need to drop it down a notch and come back, land the plane, so to speak. And on the worst days, I need somebody to push me and to make sure I'm getting up there and going through the routine. And then the love that I found for my body once my muscular structure started changing and I started learning, like, how to wear this human suit like we do clothes. All clothes aren't going to look good on everybody. Everyone's body type is drastically different. So not only do you learn to love the body type that you're in, but you learn how to use it, and then you kind of find what you're good at. I've been on the handstand journey recently, and
I
that's a
saw
really fun one to get into. But yeah, I can't say enough good things about yoga. I wish I had found and developed a practice sooner, and wholly believe, had I, that I could have avoided the pharmaceutical experiences of my life. But I know that everything that I've gone through is to shape me and mold me and get me to be where I am. I'm still kind of figuring out what that is, and it seems like doing this integration work and helping other people gives me a reason for all of the difficulty that I've been through. But yeah, it's been a long road.
You mentioned that yoga might have taken some of the place of what pharmaceuticals are doing. What's the relationship there? Can you elaborate on that?
I don't think I would have gotten into the pharmaceuticals if I had known that stretching could make my body feel better. Even when I had the terrible
So it's
arthritis and carpal
pain-based.
tunnel hands, yeah, I wasn't doing the things that I needed to. Emotionally as well, and the draw for community. And I think for an addict specifically, it's much better than an AA meeting. And you definitely don't want to go into a yoga room intoxicated, or a yoga studio, I should say. You know, like everyone will know your practice is weird. So it's just a really good accountability system. And for the non-drug addict, go back to the Coke and the water and all of that. If you do that for yourself every day, it makes it harder to do the bad things, you know? And just that constant alignment to your path, you know? Shadow work comes in all forms, and some people are fortunate not to carry the demons that other of us are. And for some people, yoga is the deepest shadow work that's necessary, because they're able to go in there and sit with their mind and do what's needed in that time. You know, for others of us, we have to dive a little deeper. And for the crazy ones, the Bikram yoga is where we go.
So you mentioned yoga is a tool to uncovering the work that you have to do. Do you know of any others that don't involve sort of out of body or alternate conscious experiences? Like breath work can usually get me there by itself, where like I'll start reliving experiences. And I was like, from breathing? Really? Yeah, okay, from breathing.
Yeah.
So that's partly a yogic practice, just staying with the breath. Do you know, have you encountered any other easy ones that wouldn't re require a massive life commitment to start uncovering the work that you know you have to do? Not you, but just people in general.
Turn the hot water off.
Convenience.
I'm cold therapy
Oh, I
through
gotcha.
and through. Yeah. No. I mean, the easiest thing you could possibly do is at the end of your shower, cut the hot water off and go cold for 30 seconds to a minute, and work yourself up until you can get into a cold shower, and then do that for 90 days. It's something that you're already going to do. Sometimes we don't even have hot showers, so it's great to then not let your day be ruined if you're comfortable with a cold shower. And there's a lot of magic that starts happening in the cold, in both the 3 to 10 minutes you would be in a cold plunge, full on ice bath scenario, or the kind of micro dosing style of, like Wim Hof preaches, do 90 days of cold showers and then check in with yourself and see how you feel. So for someone that isn't ready to go to, can't afford the yoga class, isn't ready to, you know, go into that, is insecure, things like that, I think the shower is the greatest way to start really addressing some of those issues, because it is completely a mind over matter thing, especially like here when it's 80, 90 degrees outside, or 100 degrees some places in the States. Like, it's not even that big of a jump. The breath work ties into that perfectly, because they're synonymous in my book. We always do some breathing exercises coupled with the cold therapy, and that's how you learn to step into the cold. Breath work is very challenging for me. Still, years of experience, and I hate it. I can get into it, and I can do it pretty well, but it's not something I enjoy, and it's not something that I'm like, oh, let's do breath work 3 times this week. It's like, oh, I want to do the ice bath, and I know they're going to do breath work, so I guess I'm doing breath work.
I find ice baths are way easier for me. Like full submersion Showers rip me apart just because it's like a thousand, a million icy little bullets. It's a constant differentiation. Like my mind can't really settle into itself so that I can focus on the breath. Ice baths I can do no problem because I can just, it doesn't change. So
Stubborn,
I can
yeah. You're like,
control it.
I'm with
Yeah,
you
I can
here.
be stubborn. I can't take the like micro changes and hitting. It just
Yeah,
drives me nuts. But that would be the next
that
step
might be
then.
what I mean. That might honestly be the magic in the formula, is your synapse is firing a million times because you just had a thousand streams of water hit you, and every one, it's the Joe Dispenza idea. We eliminate 25,000 cells every couple of seconds, and we replace them with even more new cells. And if you're retraining your brain during that crossover, I think that's scientifically how the healing's done. And people much smarter than I have thought way deeper on that. I don't want to act as though I'm coming up with some new philosophy on
Oh
my
no, you're
own.
good. I use his content literally every day. I do his morning and evening meditations and splice him into almost everything I do because he is so articulate at what's this doing, right? No one cares when they're in it, but people are more likely to get in it and try like a specific type of meditation or any of the things, any of the nervous system tools that he has or that are becoming popular with cold therapy and all of those, because if you know what it's doing, I think some people are more likely to do it whenever they're like, oh, this is converting this neurotransmitter and that's why I feel this way. A lot of people need the data before the experience. I tend to be one of those where I'm just like, okay, now I can will myself to do it, and then eventually I'll get addicted to the dopamine it gives, right? So I
I
like the
sold
data.
stones for 10 years, and people would ask me metaphysical questions all the time. What does this stone do? It looks pretty and it fits in this spot in the jewelry I'm making. And now, after, 10 years later, science is coming out. We're learning a lot more about the stones, and some of those metaphysics are crossing over into physics. And it's an interesting world, but I was definitely very, very factual based. I need to know why this is doing what it's doing.
The quantum science, the metaphysics, I would just call anything related to quantum physics is still fringe for most people. So a lot of the energetics, resonance, all those words are still woo-woo, but in 10 years, they'll have plenty of science behind them. I mean, they're already making new words up for sort of what all of these frequencies do. Like my business partner is in frequency specific microcurrent. If that device that does that, it basically you can program it to emit a certain resonance. It'll even scan your energetic field, also known as your aura, but it's your electromagnetic field. If you just change the words associated with something and provide some mechanisms on a way you can measure it, all of the guards come down on someone like me as just a super powerful left oriented engineering brain. Like if you're then you
Yeah,
can use
the water is very similar.
precise terminology is the difference between woo-woo and not woo-woo. Same thing, but if you can use precise terminology, someone will be like, oh, okay, cool. The water is the exact same thing. It can be living water or it can be electrolyzed, reduced water. One sounds woo-woo, one is hypermedical. Same water.
On the crystals, we are essentially based our whole society off one singular crystal, the quartz crystal, which has one
But silicon.
singular structure and one frequency and so forth. What happens when that line of innovation starts addressing all of the different mineral specimens and all of the different frequencies? I have a buddy that works with plant frequencies. As woo-woo as can be, and I have difficulty following him, but he's devoted his entire life to this science, and he will literally climb a mountain on the other side of the world to put like a vase around a living plant and harness, and collect the frequency in the water and then take it back and do his science with, And I know that is the perfect segue because we haven't even begun to tap the plant world. We've done it
Or the
for
fungal
extortion.
world. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's It's, I mean, it was just part of my crisis comes from this transition we're all going through and not being able to describe it. But as we're kind of describing, the science starts to give rise to the truth. We're starting to see the truth behind all of these, I mean, the crypto shift in our monetary system is an obvious one that everyone can wrap their head around and say, yeah, I can see how we're probably going to need cryptocurrency to be handling all the transactions for all the banks, this, that, and the other. But the thing people aren't noticing at the same time is the human evolution is also getting an upgrade right now. And I have difficulty speaking too far into it, but I am experiencing it. I don't know how to describe it other than it's a part of my shadow work, but I don't think kind of those cycles that we were talking about, Jupiter maybe,
Saturn,
before we
yeah.
got into the Saturn, yeah, the Saturn return, to be a lot different than my process just happening to be while this big shift is happening. And I know I'm not alone in that. I just was already focused on plant medicine and stuff, so it was easier for me to identify with. But our entire landscape is going to change in the next 10 years between AI, robots, the new financial system. I mean,
Yeah, it'll look totally
it's
different. Yeah, consciousness
so
will look
much.
different. People will look different. I mean, we're always getting genetic upgrades, right? Our genome is constantly communicating with all living organisms outside of us. So we are just being forced to adapt a little quicker than we usually are. But yeah, it's the tremendous amount of turmoil and stress that's present in just the information field since we have access to everything, like you pointed out, does tend to force change a little quicker than it would if you had none of that in the jungle, so to speak. If I mean, although your genome gets upgraded pretty quickly if you're under real life stress in the jungle. Yeah.
It's kind of my next step.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking about cutting out of Mexico and going south and spending some real time in the jungle with the cultures and tribes completely removed from technology and everything we know, because I want to know more about it.
Yeah, and those are the Graham Hancock speaks of this all the time. Do you know Graham Hancock? He's an author.
Yeah,
Yeah,
loosely.
Civilization of the Gods. So just ancient societies was like if we're dotted with pretty frequent periods of cataclysm somewhere, and this goes back to the story of Atlantis and just civilization and its hubris getting wiped out pretty quickly. So he's like, this is gonna happen again at some point, and the people who would survive aren't the cities, obviously, probably not even the suburbs, probably not even anyone in remotely civilized. It would be the hunter-gatherers. So it'd be the people living in the bush still or in the jungle, and survival is just their game. That's what they do. So those people, even though they're removed from all of the sort of information-based society, they would be the ones to carry on. Because it wouldn't be if we had an EMP, for instance, like just knocked out the grid and it took even, half a year to rebuild, like civilization would look totally different and they would be wholly unaffected.
I
So
just had
it's.
an epiphany on all of the psychedelic paintings you see with like an elder or a chief, knowledge busting out of their head.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they were the only ones smart enough to be able to carry the knowledge through all of the shifts, which is why our culture looks at them so primitively, yet their culture looks at them in such high regard.
Yeah.
And now living down here in Mexico and seeing the transition from the jungle into kind of the cities and the economies and things like that. Yeah, it's really interesting to see how they even carry themselves through our world with that discipline
Yeah.
and without fear and are protected because of it, you know?
Yep.
It's a really beautiful thing.
That is beautiful. We covered a ton. Is there anything we didn't cover that you would like to address?
No.
Okay. That was great. If
Yeah, I
so
think
what are you working on currently? Are you still you said you would like to be guiding people. If someone's on that exact trajectory, and they need a guide, where can people either follow your journey? Are you on social media at all, or are you just trying to get off entirely?
No, I'm on social
Okay.
media currently. The program that I want to do starts next April, so I won't be equipped with the tools to facilitate for a little while. I was thinking about doing some lifestyle coaching because I do know nutrition. I could do Zoom yoga classes and things like that, but really not feeling called. I think it'll be another couple of years before I really step into my offering. But I do have Nina, the woman that has helped me, and an awesome Rolodex of bunch of different healers, modalities. And if you're interested in just about anything connected to any of these things, I can tell you a little bit about it and show you who to talk to that can tell you more. So yeah, I'm happy to be a conduit until it's my time to really step in. And excuse me. It's like anything you do, kind of your apprenticeship or your service hours. And for now, my role could be getting to know these people and learning their stories and telling them about my training, because it's not a process that's easy to step into. Like I was saying, we require a month of alone time, preferably in an Airbnb here in Mexico where you do your ayahuasca ceremony. And that in and of itself discounts most people from being able to do the work. Outside of that, just the weekly therapy sessions, I think, add up to about $10,000 over the course of a year, or maybe a little longer. I forget the exact number, but there's a financial end as well. So what I'm kind of seeing is being able to work with people without the need for finances, so that I can help get them to where they need to be, so that when I'm ready to do the full program, maybe they're ready for it at that time. You know, some little balance of walking together. But yeah, if someone's ready like today to start, I would love to connect them to Nina and show them the program she's been working on. And she does free consultation calls, so she'll give you an hour and just sit in and see where you're at and let you know what she can do and you know what the ayahuasca might do to help.
Yeah, and I'll put all that, I'll get all that info from you and put in the show notes, because I'm sure someone is ready to do that exact thing and is just looking for someone who, well, that's a whole bunch of trust. So someone that they could trust, because that's, shadow work is not fun, right? It's, yeah, it can rip you apart. So having a guide for that is necessary and might prevent further spiraling, I would think.
Absolutely. I can definitely say that I would not recommend for people to go into ayahuasca without a clear understanding of what they're doing. And in most cases, it will cause more harm than it does good if you do not respect the entirety of the process. I see so many people sitting in ceremony and then hopping on a plane the next day or running back into it, and you're going to lose it. You're going to lose it just like you did eating some mushrooms at that Grateful Dead concert. It's really not a lot different unless you sign up and answer the call of the healing and don't just use it as some band-aid or like you would a pharmaceutical.
Yeah, and certainly not. I know people who do it recreationally. I was like, really? I mean, I'm in Asheville, so there's plenty of it here. Western North Carolina's well, it
Oh,
has
I'm
some
terrified of the idea
practitioners, but
of
I am very terrified.
people. Like concerts now. There is someone at a fish show somewhere that's drinking ayahuasca in the back of the crowd. And that's insane to me.
Well, fantastic talking to you. That was such a rich experience, and I learned a ton. So we might do this again, just to get an update on where you're at and any revelations that you've come to, because that's a roller coaster of a life. And there's an expression, I think Alex Hormozi, who's a big marketer, came across it today. He pays a ridiculous amount of money for people just to teach him things. And it was, I'd rather have the lessons without the scars. So he pays the people with the scars to give them the lessons. So you sounds like you have quite a few scars. So rather have the lessons. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We could see them. Literal scars. Yeah. Rather
Literal
have the
scars.
lessons that come with them without having to get them. Yeah. All right. I will put
All
all
right,
your
bro.
stuff below. And thank you so much for taking the time, man.
Gracias. Thank you for having me.